Hello, my name is Dario Balca, the student coordinator for the Peter A. Allard School of Law History Project. Before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge that UBC's Vancouver Point Grey campus is situated on the traditional, ancestral, unceded territory of the Musqueam people. For those listening to this recording outside of this area, I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners and caretakers of those lands. It's June 17th, 2020, and I'm joined today by Chris Heslinga. Chris graduated from the school in 2012 and soon after returned as the supervising civil lawyer for the Law Students Legal Advice Program, also known as LSLAP. The nonprofit is run by students at the school and provides free legal counsel to those who otherwise would be unable to afford it. Chris says that in addition to providing students with valuable perspective and experience in the legal profession, LSLAP plays a crucial role in filling the access to justice gap in British Columbia.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, happy to help.
Chris, can you tell me a bit about your life before law school and why you decided to pursue a legal education and ultimately a career in this field?
I'm from a small town in Ontario called Campbellford. I grew up always, I think, idealizing the law and the legal profession. To Kill a Mockingbird was my favorite book. Law and Order was my favorite TV show. And so always wanting to be a lawyer was always my goal. Went off and did a psychology degree at Western University in London, Ontario, and always though still with the aim of becoming a lawyer. And then applied to I think almost every Canadian law school, and luckily got into my first choice, which was UBC.
What motivated you to come out all the way to the West Coast to go to law school?
Honestly, I had some friends in undergrad who were from Vancouver, and just looking at their photos and hearing what life was like living in Vancouver really attracted me to the city. Also, I think I'm very kind of in line with kind of the West Coast lifestyle, and I really valued what I saw, perceived to be a greater emphasis on environmentalism and Indigenous rights on the West Coast compared to what I felt like was maybe a lack of that in Ontario, where I was living and grew up.
You've clearly spent a lot of time around the law school, but thinking back to your time as a student, are there any sort of memories that stand out to you or people that you connected with that you can share with us?
Yeah, I have lots of great memories from my time as a student at UBC Law. All of the social events were always really fun. To be honest, there were so many more social events than I was expecting coming into a professional program. I thought it was just going to be really serious, hard work, but was pleasantly surprised at how social the law school was, and really enjoyed like the times when the whole school would come together for things like trike race or the law review. And I mean, I still socialize with my small group, my SCAL small group, and my best friend to this day is a friend I made in my small group, Lisa Andrews, or Lisa Kakoski, sorry, she got married last summer.
So not too long actually after you graduated and you were called to the bar, you became involved with the Law Students Legal Advice Program, better known as LSLAP by some. Can you tell me a bit about the program and how you ended up being involved with it?
Yeah, I guess I should really start off by saying I was an LSLAP student volunteer for all 3 years of my time at UBC Law. I also was a student executive, I guess, for one of those years. So for that year, I wasn't necessarily only a volunteer, as the student executives are hired on by the program in the summer. And I mean, frankly, as a student executive, I actually had more control over the program because it is a student-run organization. And so it was, I think, frankly, my time as a student involved in LSLAP that really solidified my interest in it, that experience that then eventually allowed me to become one of the supervising lawyers. I was in private practice before and didn't really love it, to be honest. I actually like really missed the kind of experiences I got in LSLAP when I was in private practice. And so when the opportunity for supervising lawyer was posted, quite frankly, I didn't even think I was qualified. I was still, as you kind of mentioned, relatively recently called lawyer. But thankfully, through mentorship that the program LSLAP set up for me with David Mossop, who's also a former UBC Law alumni. He's an alumni, former UBC Law student. And so through that mentorship, it allowed me to kind of have access to the experience I almost needed in order to properly supervise files. And then obviously just after a few years of being a supervising lawyer, I then had enough experience to do it without the direct mentorship. And actually, Jen Lau, who was then, and I think is now again, a career services person at UBC Law, reached out to me and kind of suggested that I apply for the position. I had said that I was extremely interested, but didn't think I was qualified. And Jen encouraged me to apply anyway and show how I can work around my lack of experience with enthusiasm and a sincere desire to work and help others. And it worked out.
Can you elaborate a little bit on what the role of a supervising lawyer at LSLAP actually is and maybe what you enjoy about it?
Yeah, so the role of a supervising lawyer at LSLAP is unlike the supervising lawyers at many other clinics, even at UBC Law, in that they're just an employee of the organization LSLAP. The supervising lawyers, such as my new temporary role at the Indigenous Community Legal Clinic, involves a lot more control over the process. The files are directly in the name of the supervising lawyers, but not at LSLAP. At LSLAP, it is students first, student run. And so it's kind of nice in that I don't need to be involved in the day-to-day operations or the policies and procedures. I can just focus on meeting with students and helping them help our clients. And so my day-to-day work involves just constant in-person or now telephone meetings with students wherein they summarize the facts and issues that our clients are facing and discuss with me possible solutions and assistance we can provide. And I approve and guide them on that process. And then, of course, any documents they then produce as a result of our representation all have to be sent to me and approved by me. So a huge part of my day is going just through documents and approving or modifying and editing the documents sent to me by students, as well as training the students in the summer and in the fall when we get new students. And I mean, honestly, it's ongoing training. Pretty much every meeting I have with a student is kind of a training session, in that I kind of have to train students how to be lawyers in 20 to 30 minute meetings, and have to try to help them think like a lawyer and try to realize that a lot of the questions they have for me, they actually have the answers themselves, but that's not an easy task to do, unfortunately. And so training students not only on substantive areas of law, of which there are a lot of areas that LSLAP covers, but also on how to think like a lawyer and how to practice law. So it's quite difficult, but it is enjoyable because when it works, it's incredibly rewarding when I can see that the students are, you know, working hard at helping clients and working hard at learning how to practice law. And I think practice law from an LSLAP perspective is meant to be client-centered and trauma-informed. And so that's really encouraging too, having students who really can empathize with our clients and encouraging that while still maintaining kind of the professional objectivity that's required for our jobs.
LSLAP is something that the school is quite well known for. It definitely is something that comes up quite prominently when you're researching what law school to go to. You hear a lot about it in your first couple of weeks at law school. And I'm wondering, you kind of touched on this a little bit in your previous answer, but I'm wondering if you can kind of talk about what you feel that students gain from that experiential hands-on experience and why you recommend that students join.
Well, I think that there's the obvious benefits of practical legal experience, experience in interviewing real life clients and working on real life legal problems. And then of course the benefit of direct legal supervision and learning what it's like to work directly with a lawyer and how lawyers go about solving problems and dealing with clients. But I think there's also a really important exposure piece almost, where law school students who, let's be honest, still come from highly privileged backgrounds and parts of our society are exposed to less advantaged and marginalized, disenfranchised people, and what it's like for our clients, the struggles they deal with, and the society that often places them in the situations that they find themselves in. So I think that's a really important part of LSLAP, is seeing what the real world is often like for disadvantaged and poverty-stricken people. And I also hope to be able to also encourage a sense of responsibility in students in realizing that with the great amount of power and privilege that comes along with being a lawyer or obtaining legal education, there also comes what I believe to be an incredible burden of responsibility to give back to people who are less privileged and less powerful in our society. And so I think, you know, exposing students to this kind of work not only helps them realize what it's like for those less privileged than them, but also hopefully encourages them to give back to those communities and hopefully foster a passion for volunteering and helping those less fortunate.
Keeping with that theme of giving back, LSLAP clearly has benefits for students who are part of the program, but also for the clients who, as you say, are not necessarily from privileged backgrounds and might not have a lot of access to counsel. Can you talk about how this program benefits the community that it serves?
I think you can even be more specific when you're talking about our clients. Our clients, by definition, have a lack of access to justice and legal advice and education. Quite frankly, if one of our clients has access to a pro bono counsel, we can't help them. We are here to help everyone who is left by the wayside in access to justice. And by definition, our clients are poverty stricken and are not privileged, because we only serve poverty-stricken people, and we kind of have a moving target about what that is. And so it allows us to represent people, even if they're kind of experiencing temporary, you know, limits on their access to justice. And I think it is therein where our service is so necessary. We are the second largest provider of legal services in this province, second only to legal aid. We operate on, I think, less than 1/10 of the budget of legal aid. And so if you're talking about like bang for your buck, you don't get it any better than at LSLAP. We turn a very, very small amount of money that we get to operate into helping thousands of people every year. And I mean, I think I should all, it's also important to note, helping hundreds of students every year as well learn about poverty law issues and experiences. And so, I mean, the service to the community is that there is no one else. Quite frankly, I think we are providing a service that the government should frankly be responsible for providing, because the people we serve have absolutely no one else to turn to. So without us, there would be thousands of people every year in this province who would have absolutely no access to advice, services, or education.
For future listeners, however many years down the road, at the time of this recording, we're in the middle of a global pandemic called the COVID-19 pandemic that has forced many of us here in Canada, at least, to work from home and close down offices and businesses. I know that LSLAP has taken some steps to be able to keep running its clinic and keep helping clients through this situation. Can you describe the challenges that have been associated with the pandemic and how the program is adjusting in order to be able to keep going?
We have fully gone online in terms of my work with the students. All my supervision is now either done through virtual meetings such as through Zoom or through mainly telephone calls with students. As a consequence, I've had to lengthen a lot of my meeting times to accommodate the difficulties with this slightly more disconnected form of communication. It also, quite frankly, limits my ability to do this work in that for some reason, virtual meetings are exponentially more exhausting than in-person meetings, at least for me, and I've certainly heard from many other people who have to do lots of virtual meetings. And however, I mean, that hasn't necessarily resulted in any decrease in our services or quality, because we frankly just don't have as many files, because our intake has only resumed this week. Normally, we would have resumed doing intake, as in bringing in new clients, halfway through May. So we have a significant delay in our ability to do intake. And then, of course, our intake, which is normally done in person at community centers across the Lower Mainland, is also now all done virtually through virtual meetings or telephone meetings. And obviously, that presents barriers to our clients and creates more access to justice problems. So I do know that despite the intakes resuming this week, we only have a few. We don't have a lot. Whereas, of course, normally in any one given week, we'd have dozens and dozens of new files. And the students also had to go through a painstaking process of scanning every document that we had at our offices at UBC Law online onto our digital file management software. And there are some minor difficulties the students are still having, maybe accessing all of that, those documents and materials. Whereas it'd be a lot easier in person just to physically hold the file. But despite all that, we're still working diligently on all the files we've had. And like I said, and we've even begun opening new files as well.
As you were mentioning to me earlier, LSLAP also exists as a 4-credit offering at the law school, and you're involved in that as the instructor. Can you tell me about a little bit about that course and what the students do and what your involvement looks like?
Yeah, LSLAP for credit has existed for as long as I've known about LSLAP. It previously operated kind of on its own, on its own little island, in that if there was almost no involvement with the law school faculty. And it kind of operated previously as almost like a bonus that students could get if they worked a lot of LSLAP hours, especially during the school year when they wouldn't be getting paid for it at all. And it allowed those students to get credit, law school credit, for the amount of, for the endless hours they would pour in, quite frankly, like a paltry amount of credit for the amount of work that these students would usually do. So it was kind of just always the most experienced LSLAP students would then also be in the LSLAP for credit program, and they just get some law school credit. That changed as I was returning back to the law school, LSLAP, as a supervising lawyer, and it was becoming integrated into the more like traditional law school faculty framework, and there was actual funding. As I was saying previously, the instructors of the LSLAP for credit program didn't even receive funding for it. They were, I guess, volunteering for the law school, and you know, absolutely justifiably, the dean realized that that's not a very tenable or really good situation for the instructors either. There's lack of support and resources then, and so that also though meant formalizing the course and having a proper syllabus and course requirements. And I also think that greatly benefited the program. It made it a much more academic type program. And so now it is not just a bonus you get for doing a lot of LSLAP work. It is a much more traditional type course where we meet weekly or bi-weekly in a group setting and do file reviews or case rounds, kind of similar, almost like a med school model where you kind of learn from the experiences of all your other colleagues. I guess that's also just kind of the trend of clinical legal education generally, as I'm becoming more and more involved and aware of those of those trends. And I also have traditional style lectures where I provide substantive legal education, both on the law and also how to practice law. And there's a real emphasis on reflection in this course as well, where the students are encouraged and well required to reflect on their work with a like academic or critical societal perspective, thinking about, you know, what societal systems caused our clients to get in the situations they find themselves, or how societal systems affected the outcome of their particular case. So there's a real added academic reflection in the LSLAP for credit program. And as well as requiring a paper at the end or community group presentation, which the students have had an option to do. And when the students choose a community group presentation instead of a paper, they've produced amazing legal education presentations to people, such as UBC students at the Nest. We did a tenants' rights booth. We provided human rights education to queer, trans, and, you know, the whole community at the community center on the west end of Vancouver, and tons of others. Presentation of social workers, women fleeing domestic abuse, even though LSLAP doesn't do family law. The LSLAP for Credit program does allow us to extend what we do in the LSLAP program.
Yeah. One of your current roles at the law school is also as a supervisor for the Indigenous Community Legal Clinic, ICLC. I think it's clear from some of your previous answers that this is an area you're interested in and quite passionate about. So I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about the clinic and what your role is within it.
I'm probably woefully inadequate at being able to describe the clinic and its ethos and its approach to legal education and client service, because I guess I want to emphasize how what I've learned is that they really try to do things differently at the ICLC, at the Indigenous Community Legal Clinic. The short amount of time I've spent there, I mean, less than a year so far, has made me question my practices in many different ways. It has made me try to unlearn habits I formed as a lawyer and a supervisor. It's made me realize how ignorant I am in terms of Indigenous perspectives, histories, cultures, and ways of being, and how damaging the way I practice law can be for Indigenous students and Indigenous people. Trying to focus more on indigenizing my practice and supervision is something I've learned while being at the Indigenous Community Legal Clinic. I mean, I can't say enough about how much it has opened my eyes to just the terrible ways that colonialism has seeped itself into every part of our society, including the way I was educated in law at UBC and the way I've been practicing law prior to joining the ICLC. And I hope to be able to continue this growth in education. Even though my contract with the ICLC is up at the end of August of this year, I hope to be able to continue to volunteer with them. I mean, I'm going to try to take the course even. And I mean, the mentorship I've been provided by Patricia Barkaskis, the academic director, and Mark Gervin, the legal director, has been amazing, as well as the stuff I've learned from their students, mostly Indigenous students. And that's part of what I've learned there, is that students have as much, if not more, to teach me than I have to teach them. And that's especially true for our Indigenous students.
How do you think you'll take some of that experience, and will it carry over into your other roles at the law school and how you're interacting with students and helping them learn?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. It's already affected the way I do my supervision at LSLAP. I have tried to bring a lot of those lessons into every area of my practice, including my teaching within LSLAP for Credit. I have been, I mean, wanting to maybe do a much more fundamental rewrite of the LSLAP for Credit program, but probably will only be after my year is finished at the ICLC, so I can kind of solidify all my lessons and make sure I'm applying them properly to my other work.
You spent a lot of the last decade at the school, either as a student or working there in your various roles. Can you tell me a bit about how you've seen the law school change during that time?
Well, I think the law school has struggled to become a more inclusive and welcoming place for, you know, anyone who's not white or cisgendered. And I think it's come a long way in that regard. I was very encouraged to see, discussions being had about transphobia within the law school. And I mean, I was frankly disturbed to hear how my trans colleagues who went to school at the same time that I did, were classmates of mine, had absolutely terrible experiences while being in the law school. The same can be said about my Indigenous colleagues, actually, who went to school at the same time I did and had vastly different experiences. I see signs that things are improving in those regards at the law school, but I still think we have a long, long ways to go.
I hope it's not sort of too broad a question, but can you just describe beyond the what you do day to day, kind of what it's like to be both a student and someone who works at the law school and be surrounded by the people that you're surrounded by?
Well, I guess I should preface my answer with an acknowledgement that I am a white cisgendered male and that a lot of my positive experiences as a student stem from those qualities I'm just so happen to have. And acknowledging that had it not been for those character traits of mine, my experiences both as a student and as a faculty member, I think would have been far different and not in a good way. So that being said, I did have a positive experience as a student learning at UBC Law. I'll be honest, I think there's a far too great of a presence and influence of private law firms and private corporations within our law school, and not enough of a presence or influence for social justice and poverty law initiatives and Indigenous-led initiatives. I can see that some of that is improving, but at the same time, I see us taking steps backwards as well. Why corporations needs to be a necessary course for first-year students, I cannot understand, other than believing that there's inappropriate influence being applied by corporations and big law firms whose presence is constantly known in the law school just simply by looking at the names plastered all over the walls and classrooms. So it's not always a super safe feeling place for those who want to fight against powerful corporations. And that existed when I was a student and even still now today.
Is there anything coming up in your future at the law school or LSLAP's future that you'd like to share?
We're getting an LSLAP articling student this summer, and it should be an ongoing position. So that's really exciting. It's really great having new articling positions available in this profession that are not in private law and are for people who want to improve our society. And so that's really exciting. And the LSLAP for Credit program continues to be expanded and increase in its ability to take on more students. And as I said, I hope to be able to revamp it and kind of indigenize the way I've been teaching the LSLAP for Credit course as best as I'm able to as a white settler. And I mean, I don't know if it's through LSLAP, but I think the greater emphasis on clinical education at the law school generally is really encouraging and exciting as a clinical educator.
Thank you so much again for doing this, and it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm happy to have participated.